And something that I learned quite quickly was that actually it doesn't really matter what your job title is, you are all qualified to influence a change. And actually, why shouldn't we listen to those opinions?
Hi everybody, I'm Jonathan Richards, and this is the HR Heroes podcast, brought to you by Breathe HR. In this series, we're celebrating and sharing the stories of small businesses who are doing a great job of managing their people and are, in my eyes, HR heroes. In today's episode, I'm joined by Gemma Spinks, Director of Neo PR. Gemma and I continue the conversation on company culture. We talk about how Neo PR have given their employees a voice, why it's important to care for your people, and why millennials want nothing more than a good work-life balance and to avoid getting the dread about coming to work. I'm sure you'll agree that Gemma's enthusiasm for making company culture a business priority is definitely infectious. Hi, Gemma. Thanks for taking the time to come on the show.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
And also congratulations for making it onto the Breathe Culture Leaders list.
Thank you. It's very, very exciting for us.
I thought it was awesome. So as a way of just sort of kicking things off and for the benefit of the listeners, it would be great if you could just introduce yourself and give them an overview of what Neo PR does.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Gemma Spinks. I am one of the directors at Neo PR. We are a public relations agency specialising in B2B tech companies. We're based just outside of Buckinghamshire, quite a small business. There's only about 15 of us. Nice rural location with welly boots and an office dog. So that's us in a nutshell.
Excellent. Yeah, I want to go into to talk some more about the office dog, because I don't know if you're aware, but we have at least one office dog and often two. Oh. So there's something shared there.
Absolutely. We love office dogs.
Very good. So when I read through your culture list entry, it was very clear that having and creating a great culture is core to the way you run Neo. And I think the phrase that was used was a business priority. Mm-hmm. So sort of just to expand on that, as a way of kicking things off, what does the term company culture mean to you?
I think company culture to me actually is more about a feeling and kind of a vibe that you get from a team. I'd say that it's kind of more than just perks and monetary incentives. It's just about how you can make your team feel engaged and empowered. And that's something that we have really prioritized here in terms of allowing the guys to have their own voice. So I think in a small business, in any size business, but specifically for us in a small business, it's quite important to make sure that we listen to everybody, because I think everybody kind of gets a feeling and an overview for what's going on day to day. Because we are small and we work very closely together, they all tend to have their own views and their own opinions. And something that I learned quite quickly was that actually it doesn't really matter what your job title is. You are all qualified to influence a change. And actually, why shouldn't we listen to those opinions? So for me, culture is about allowing our team to have a voice and actually influence change, not just for themselves, but actually for the wider team.
Brilliant. No, I totally agree. And the subject about it being more than just perks has come up in an awful lot of conversations that I had. It's more than just the pool table and the fruit bowl. They're nice, but they're not the be all and end all.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's about reminding that your employees that actually you see them as people and they're not just a number, and perks and things like that, of course, they're great, but actually they're just sort of paper incentives, if that makes sense. But actually treat someone like a person and actually really caring and understanding them as an individual and the challenges that they might face, not just inside of work, but outside of work, I think makes such a massive difference to somebody feeling valued.
Yeah. Thinking of employees as people, there's a revolutionary idea.
Yeah, exactly. If only everybody would think that way.
Yeah, right. I love the term human resource. Doesn't it just personalize things?
Definitely.
So do you think when it comes to creating a culture or to a culture forming in an organization, does it need to be created or can it be allowed to grow organically or naturally?
I think you have to have an instigator. In our case, I was very much the instigator. We didn't necessarily have a culture beforehand, not because we didn't want one, but just because I think there was so much more going on that it wasn't necessarily thought about. And it's something that I realized I valued as a person, and I wanted to work somewhere where that was a business value. So I think you need an instigator, and then once everybody realizes that it's okay to say their opinions, then actually it does start to grow organically. But it is really important to have the backing of senior team members, because at the end of the day, if they're not on board with it, then it's really not going to go anywhere. You can try and influence as much change as you want from within the team, but you need to make, I think, the senior team really understand why it's important to the business. And I think once you have that, then absolutely it starts to grow organically. If you force it too much, it's not going to be what you want it to be. It needs to be kind of grown from within.
And to give employees a voice, how do you, when they take the fledgling steps to sort of raise a hand and say, I've got something to say, how do you encourage that? Do you tease it out of people? Were your people reticent to do that?
I wouldn't say reticent, but I think maybe there is a fear, obviously, amongst employees that if you're too opinionated, then potentially you have a black mark against your name and you look like you're trying to cause trouble. But actually, I think because we have a very flat structure and the senior team sit within the wider team, so it doesn't necessarily feel like you're going to the boss or you're saying something to the boss, because we all kind of are very flat within that. So I think them seeing us on a level actually really helped there. And once somebody started talking and actually we took note and we did something about it, then others are also starting to put their hand up. Also, something else that we implemented was an anonymous system. So we use something called Tiny Pulse, which we ask our employees every single week a different question, but all the answers are anonymous. So actually they can put anything on there that they feel they want to talk about. They can put suggestions. I mean, it's not a case of, oh, it was me. It's just a case of, look, I wanted to flag this. And if at a later date they wanted to say, yes, it was me, can we talk about it more, then that's fine. But if they wanted to raise it anonymously and stay anonymous, then that's also fine. And we still action those, whether they're anonymous or not.
Okay, yeah, that's an interesting one, because I've heard quite strong arguments on either side as to whether employee feedback or employee engagement surveys should be anonymous or not. Mm-hmm. You obviously feel sort of as a starting point that it should be.
Yeah, and I would say the majority of times, probably 90% of the time, if I respond to somebody's anonymous feedback, they will then make themselves known and say, yes, that was me. Can we talk about it further? So I think it's just a case of allowing them to say it first. And then once somebody's happy to talk about it, they're then happy to say, yes, it was me. We can discuss it further.
Brilliant. Yeah, and no, I love that approach. Now, you recently wrote a blog post up on your website called Creating the Ultimate Office Culture. Mm-hmm. So that's quite a claim. No, I'm not saying you were claiming it for yourself, but it's quite a thing to aim for.
Yeah.
You listed five steps, and we've touched on the first one, which is treat your employees like people. Mm-hmm. I guess in a little way, we've touched on the second one, where you say ask for regular input. Is there anything more that you do around the organization to get input to come in? Obviously, Tiny Pulse is great, but what else can you do? What else could the listeners do in their businesses to get regular input?
I think having regular meetings with the entire team is a really good one. So we have something that we call a huddle. Once a week, the whole team sits down together. We talk about our highlights, our lowlights of the week. We give out a little fluffy dog to our star PR of the week. And then we also just say, look, does anybody want to discuss anything? Does anybody have any challenges this week that they want to raise? Does anyone have any questions? And we just kind of have an open forum for them to do that. We also sit down, we call them pods. They're like mini teams within our business. And we always sit down regularly with those pods as well and ask, how are you feeling? Is there anything you want to raise? And then in addition to that, we have regular meetings once a week with the management team. So if the line managers within the business have heard anything through the grapevine, or somebody might have come to them and had a frustration or an idea, they can raise it to the board at that point as well. So there's lots of different touch points at every level to allow someone to kind of share their input and ask questions if they have them.
Amazing. And when it comes to meetings, I know an awful lot of people think that meetings are bad news and a complete waste of time. Have you got any tips for how to make meetings a little bit more lively, a little bit more engaging?
Don't have an agenda is
okay.
What I would say. For those kind of meetings where we are looking for input, there's never an agenda. We just sit down and say, what do you want to talk about? Have you got any challenges? We might have some ideas in our own head of things that we want to talk about. So I might say, oh, actually, can we talk about this or can we talk about that? But I just kind of let people talk freely. And you'll find the more people in the room, they start to bounce off each other. And actually, they're saying, oh, yeah, well, actually, I thought about this or I thought about that. And I think an informal setting for a meeting is far, far better than trying to set an agenda, booking a meeting room, making it very official. Just kind of having a chat, like I said, about treating people like people. Just have a chat as you would with a friend.
Yeah, great. I think it sounds like you, with that kind of meeting, you've got to be very good at embracing silence.
Yes.
Giving people the space to be comfortable with saying nothing and then finding a voice for themselves with what they want to say.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, excellent. And then moving on in your blog post, you talk about embracing an open culture. And I think you had a particularly good line on this one. What's an open culture to you?
An open culture here is actually no question will remain unanswered. I think we're quite good at really being very transparent with the team and having that openness all the way from the top, from our MD, all the way down to our interns. If anybody asks a question about the business, about sales, about resource, about anything, I can't really think of any time where one of us had said, oh, well, I can't give you an answer to that, or sorry, but that's not something we want to share. I think having that open culture and creating a relationship at all levels throughout the team is really, really important. And trying to have very regular reviews as well and touch points with different members of the team. Our MD tries to take everybody out to lunch at least once a quarter, once every 6 months, just to have a chat with them. How are they getting on in life? How are they getting on at work? Just that very open, friendly culture, I think, is what works for us.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, no, I love that. So then moving on to care about your team. I mean, on at one level, these all sound very, very obvious, very basic, but actually you take them to another depth. It's clearly, your post is clearly rooted in how you run your business. So, you know, are there any practical things that you can suggest or tips about how you really do care for your team?
Yeah, I think you actually hit the nail on the head there when you said about taking it to the next level. All of these points are common sense. Care about your team. Of course, care about your team. But it's just taking it to that next level. And I think this point is a point that I like to make around illness or people having challenges outside of work and actually being more than just an employer when it comes to those kind of things and trying to accommodate that. It became really apparent to us when it was about 3 years ago. We had an employee that we really valued. She became quite unwell and was unable to work. So she left the business for a while. And then when she got better, we had a conversation about her coming back to work. She was quite open and honest and said, look, I won't make a good full-time employee because I'm not reliable enough. I don't know how I'm going to feel on a day-to-day basis. And I'd love to come back, but I just don't think my body's quite ready for it. So at that point, we said, okay, fine. Do you want to come back on a freelance basis? You can flex your hours. If you're not feeling well, just let one of us know. You don't have to work that day. You can work as many or as little hours as you want in a week. You don't have to work in the office. Basically just being really accommodating because she was a great member of our team and she was really valued. And so she still works with us now on that basis. And we've got a couple of other members of team who have ongoing illnesses that they're just accommodated. Why would I let somebody leave because they're not well? It makes no sense. They're a really valued member of the team. They have something that they have to deal with, which is stressful enough, let alone having to deal with an unaccommodating employer as well. Just make it work. Care about them. Yeah. People have lives outside of work. Everybody does. You have to deal with it.
Yeah, I love hearing the passion in your voice as you're talking about that. It's so obviously at the heart of what you believe, which is fantastic. I'm just going to skip ahead. I've got a couple of questions ahead, but something you raised there makes me think about it. You've got this idea of parents in PR.
Yeah.
What does that mean? What does that look like?
So obviously that kind of comes back to me just saying as well that people have lives outside of work. We're an all-women team, actually, apart from our MD, who's a male. So inevitably, there are going to be some ladies in our team who have children or are looking to have children. And again, why would you want to lose a team member just because they're at a point in their life where actually they want to have a family?
Yeah, so we
decided that we just wanted to be accommodating for when people wanted to come back to work. I haven't had any children yet myself, but I know from friends and from family that it's a really difficult time. Obviously, leaving your baby, trying to sort your finances, deciding what you're going to do about your career. And we just wanted to make sure that they felt cared for. So being able to give them the choice around what hours they worked, what days they worked, not having to worry if actually they did have to work from home one day because their child was unwell, or they needed to go to a school play or a sports day, the kind of things that working parents sometimes have to miss. And actually, mm-hmm. There's, I'm sure, a lot of guilt around that and a lot of sadness that they have to miss those times in their children's lives. So we put together something that actually allows them to work around that and enjoy work, but also enjoy their home life.
Love it. It was one of the joys in my life that running my own business meant that I could take my daughter to school for 2 or 3 days a week and could pick her up from school and spend that really yeah. nice time with her. And it's just so true. And yeah. I think that's awesome.
We pledge to invest in our company culture, regardless of our business size, to benefit our people and propel our business forward. Why don't you take the culture pledge? Visit breathehr.com/pledge to sign up now.
The other thing that came out from your culture leaders list entry was the idea about having a company full of millennials who have a different expectation of culture and flexibility.
Yeah.
I think you raised the idea of work hard and play hard. So how do you take that into account? Can that conflict with the need to get a job done?
I mean, being a millennial myself, I think I realise that actually millennials don't get very nice press. We're often yeah. called lazy, self-righteous, and other names that aren't very nice. But actually, yeah. that's not true at all. I'm sure there are some millennials out there that maybe live up to that. But the majority of us actually just want to have a really nice work-life balance. And the majority of our team are millennials. And actually, they have a drive and a spirit that you don't always see in maybe other generations.
Yeah.
And I think once you engage them in your business, they are fully engaged. They want to make a change. They want to do a good job. They want to make a difference. But it's not just about the job for millennials. I think it's definitely about a lifestyle and making sure that they can work hard and play hard and actually get on with their team. So we realize that. And now that's why we do regular socials. We do lots of things to make sure that we're actually friends outside of work. We socialize outside of work. We attend each other's weddings. All those things that are just nice. You spend the majority of your time with the people that you work with. So why would you not want to socialize with them and be friendly? And I think that's really what a millennial is looking for. Something where they can succeed at work. They can drive to grow in their own career, but actually they can have fun at work. They can enjoy coming to work. They don't want that dread. And I think we've managed to get that here. Over the last 18 months, 2 years, we haven't really seen anybody leave, which is really nice. I think just trying to socialize and having that nice balance, I don't really think it makes a difference to the work, because if you've got a good employee and you've hired the right person, they will get their work done because they want to succeed for themselves as well.
Yeah. And I think so often what's written or said about millennials is, and I regularly get in trouble for standing up at events and saying, can we just drop the term, please? Can we just call everybody people?
Yeah, exactly.
But one of the things that's so often written is that they want to work with or work for a company with a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do you use any of the language? I don't want to use the word jargon because it sounds derogatory, but do you use any of the language around culture, the idea of purpose and mission and vision and values and so on?
No, not at all. And I think, again, that comes down to what I said before about just talking to each other like people. Yeah, of course, we have a mission as a business and we have targets and ideas and messaging, but that's not really what it's about. Would you talk to your friend or your family in that way? No, you wouldn't.
No.
So, yeah, it doesn't really make any difference. I think you can get that across without using the jargon. But for some businesses, it works. I don't think it's really right for us.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I get that. So when you've clearly got this great culture built and you work really hard to nurture it and everybody's along with it, as you add new employees, how do you preserve it? So, for instance, if you're recruiting somebody, how do you test for culture fit, if indeed you do?
Yeah, I think it's definitely something that's getting harder the bigger you get as a business. And when you are interviewing someone, you have to look at them and think, right, your skills, yeah, might be a perfect fit, but are you a culture fit? Because if they're not a culture fit, it just won't work. And either they'll leave in 6 months' time or the team won't quite gel. And I do think it's really, really important to make sure that person joining us understands our culture and wants to be a part of it. And I think that's maybe why we spend so much time pushing our culture on social media. So anybody that comes to an interview already knows what our culture is, how we feel as a business. And most people who come for an interview, to be fair, actually comment on it and say, it looks like you've got a nice open culture. I want to be a part of it. So I think just being really open and transparent in that interview process as well.
Yeah. So would you value culture fit over skills fit?
Oh, that's a hard one.
Hypothetical as well, because you rarely get one or the other. But
yes, I think we probably would. I think we probably would, because actually, if you have someone that isn't the culture fit, and I'm not talking perfect culture fit, of course, you're going to get someone who's never going to be a perfect fit, but culture fit enough. Because otherwise it is going to be a detriment to the business, because if you don't get on as a team, being such a small team as well, we have to work so closely. And if you can't get on or your personalities clash, it just isn't going to work.
Yeah. And when that new person joins, do you have any particular way that you onboard them? I know people are always looking for ideas about how to bring people into an organization, because I find it's the time of biggest risk, or maybe the biggest risk is the moment when they've accepted to the moment when they turn up for the first day. And then the second biggest risk is those first couple of months. Do you have anything that you could share about how you onboard new employees?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of onboarding, I'd say we make culture part of the agenda. So as part of our onboarding process, obviously there's an agenda of things that the new person would learn, and culture is a section. We sit down with them and say, look, this is our culture. We talk them through parents in PR. We talk them through the perks. We talk them through the different things that we do here to promote culture. So it's very much part of their learning. They get added to Tiny Pulse as of day one. So they don't have to be here for a certain amount of time before they start to answer the questions. And Tiny Pulse also has an onboarding process where they can answer specific questions about their experiences during the first few weeks of their employment.
That's great.
They join the huddles, they join those meetings, they're kind of thrown right into it. And I also have kind of an open door policy and one of those things where if someone wants to talk to you, never say no, make the time. It doesn't matter if you're on deadline, make the time to talk to someone because they want to talk to you. And I think you need to get that across to a new employee because they'll have plenty of questions. So just make it feel like you have time for them no matter what you're doing.
Yeah, brilliant. It's so, so important when you've got an open culture that you're open right from the beginning. If you close from the beginning, it's so difficult to get them to open up again.
Absolutely, definitely.
Totally live that. And do you, just sort of moving on the employee life cycle, so we've got new people recruited, we've got them coming on board. Mm-hmm. How do you monitor the team happiness? Do you measure it in any way?
We do. So through Tiny Pulse, we have a question once a month, literally says, are you happy at work? And they have to answer it between 1 and 10. 1 is super sad. 10 is amazingly happy. I never want to leave. And we consistently are above benchmark. We hit around 8.5 on average, wow. Which I think is pretty high.
Right.
I'm quite happy with that. So that is one way of measuring happiness. But like I said, having those chats and stuff as well. And in those management meetings that I talked about, once a month, we just have a chat about the team and say, do we think everybody's happy? How is everybody feeling? Is there anyone that we need to talk to, worry about? And just think about what we can do to make everybody a bit more happy.
Yeah, great. I get that. So we touched on office dogs a little bit at the beginning. Tell me, what role does Sam play in the office?
Oh, Sam, he's our favourite employee. he comes in every day. He's a delight. He sits in the corner and he's very quiet, but he does love a cuddle. And I do think he plays a really big part in our office vibe. If he's not here for a week or something, you definitely feel it in the office and everybody misses him. If you like dogs, they just cheer you up. So he's just nice to have around. And obviously we've got an office sofa. Some people just like to have a change of scenery, sit on the sofa rather than sit on your desk and work. And he will always come over for a cuddle. There's lots of pictures on our Instagram of him cuddling people on the sofa. So he's an
intense his sofa then, clearly.
Yeah, it's his sofa, absolutely.
Brilliant. And then you, I read somewhere that you've got a dog, Wilson, was it a puppy?
Yes, I've got Wilson. He looks like a puppy, but he's actually 5. He's just very small.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, I mean, open house for dogs. Do you allow anybody to bring in pets?
Yeah, well-behaved ones. Wilson does occasionally come to the office. I'm quite lucky in that my husband works from home, so Wilson gets a playmate every day. But we've had other office dogs. Other employees have brought their dogs in. We've even had clients bring their dog to the office, which is nice. We even had guinea pigs in once on a little holiday.
So
we love animals in the office. We do have one girl who's trying to bring in her cat, but we're not quite sure how Sam will deal with that. So we might have to think about how we do that one.
Yeah, I love the idea. I don't know if you've heard, but there was something rumored about Google where one of their core values was we love cats, but we're dog people. So really, we don't appreciate you bringing your cats in.
Oh, I don't know how they got around that one. No discrimination, everything.
exactly. Excellent. So sort of just as we start to bring things to a close, can you give me any examples of how the strong culture that you've built has helped the business, or what positive effects have you seen, maybe specific examples or just in general?
There's obviously specific ones around employee retention. Over the last 18 months, our retention is zero. We haven't had anybody leave, which is always nice. And before that, it was about 20%. PRs generally tend to have quite high people turnover. And I think employee retention then results in client retention, because if your clients are happy and they have the same team, then they tend to stay around for longer. Business growth, we've grown about 20% year on year for the last few years. And I do genuinely believe that the success of our team has a massive difference on business success. And just the feel in the office, since we've really, really focused on culture and made it a really big part of our business, everyone's just happier. And I really do feel that. It sounds a little bit cheesy, but I do think it makes a difference. Everyone in the office talks to each other. They go out for lunch. We socialise outside of work. We really just care about each other. And I do think that makes a difference. When you come into the office every day and you're greeted with smiley faces, you're going to do your job better.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And I guess also one of the great things about a strong culture is when times are not so good, when there are specific challenges, because it's the strength of the culture as to how it handles the bad times or the difficult times that can often be make or break. Is there anything specific, any challenges you could sort of think about?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we had one actually a few months ago. One of our employees, bless her, had appendicitis, and she was just disappeared for a couple of weeks. She went to the doctors and didn't return. She had to have her appendix out. And in that scenario, obviously the team has to rally around each other. It was a really busy time anyway. We had some holidays going on, but it didn't it wasn't an issue. We just kind of rallied around each other. Everybody helped, even if they didn't work on the same accounts. They were happy to kind of take stuff on and just be there for each other. And I think those kind of things really do show when you've got a really tight-knit team and a good culture. It's not a case of, oh, well, your team can deal with that because it's your problem. It's everybody's problem. And they just want to make sure that everyone's okay. And then when she came back, obviously, everybody was still caring and wanted to make sure that she didn't have too much put back on her, and were just happy to help. And I think that really, really shows when you've got a good culture. Also, losing clients. We're an agency. Of course, we're going to lose the odd client. It's not ideal, but it happens. And again, everybody kind of realizes that, you know what, it's rubbish. It happens. But let's all rally around each other. We get on with it. We get new clients, and everything will be okay. People don't tend to jump ship at the first panic, which I think is kind of definitely a reflection on the culture.
Amazing. Yeah, absolutely. The ideas that you've got, the strong ideas that you've got about building a culture, is there a particular organization or company that you particularly admire? And if so, what's so special about it?
Yes, I've got a slight obsession with Richard Branson. If you look at the blogs I write, have a look at my LinkedIn, you will definitely realise my obsession with him. For me, I think I've always admired Virgin for their culture and his commitment as an entrepreneur to people. His quotes are my favourite business quotes. I think he just has a really good ethos and he really knows how to look after people. And I think I always joke in the office and say that I want us to be the Virgin of PR agencies. Just because I feel like he's got it right. People want to work at Virgin because it's a great place to work. And he really does seem like he cares about his people. So, yeah, he's who I look up to when it comes to culture.
Brilliant. Yeah, and I totally agree. I'm also a big fan. So that I guess, kind of leads quite nicely into my sort of wrap-up questions. Given that Richard Branson lives on a desert island, or not quite desert island, but an amazing little island, yeah. He says he has all his best ideas when he's on Necker. Mm-hmm. Where do you get your ideas? Do you have a particular place or a particular mindset?
In the car. I tend to always think about things on the way to work or on the way home from work. I have about a half an hour drive either way, so it's enough time to kind of think about the day and think about things. And yeah, I tend to just have a little brainwave in the car and then get to work and whack it out onto an email to everyone. But yeah, that's mostly where I think about the ideas, I'd say, in the car.
Brilliant. And do you have a particular way of capturing those ideas? It can be tricky when you're driving.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to have quite a good memory most of the time. So as soon as I'm somewhere where I can get on my laptop or my phone, I tend to just email it to someone else in the team and just say, I just had this idea, what do you think? Or Skype it to someone, and then just say, oh, I think we should do this, can we have a chat about it?
Brilliant. Okay, no, that's fantastic. And then one last question, also linked to a desert island. If you got stranded on a desert island, what's the one thing you take with you? What could you not do without?
Oh, that's a hard one. Obviously, apart from the family and friends, I would say I could not live without. Oh, you can't really say your phone, can you? That's quite sad.
Be difficult to plug it in, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would be. This is way harder than I thought. Nachos. I couldn't live without nachos for sure.
Nachos. Brilliant. Yeah. Okay. No.
Always food-related.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we're definitely food-related here as well. Yeah. Look, Gemma, this has been fantastic. Really appreciate you taking the time to speak to me and to share your success at Neo. How can people get in touch with you?
So you can grab me on email. I'm literally gemma@neopr.co.uk. Tweet me or just drop an email in from the website. I'm always up for chatting, as you've probably realised during this podcast. But yeah, get hold of me the usual ways. Email's probably the quickest. But yeah, always happy to kind of answer questions.
Great. You're the perfect podcast interviewee. Look, brilliant. Thank you for that. I appreciate your time.
Absolutely. I've really enjoyed it. So thank you very much for having me.
No, you're more than welcome. Thanks, Gemma.
Thank you.
A huge thank you again to Gemma for her time and for being such an ambassador for great company culture. Next time, I'll be joined by Nikki Gattenby, MD of PropellerNet, who are on a mission to make all of our lives better. So if you haven't already done so, please subscribe to get new episodes as soon as they become available. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, and anywhere else you might listen. If you've enjoyed listening to this episode, please leave us a review, as we'd love to know what you think. You can find out more about Breathe HR and what we do by visiting breathehr.com. I'll see you next time.